Welcome to the Property Nomads podcast. And here are your hosts, Rob Smallbone and Matt McSherry.
Yes, yeah, so we've got a mastermind actually going on at the moment. Myself and Matt are involved with this. Four of us sat around the table. We're currently with Mark and Alex. They'll introduce themselves in a second. We're actually at Mark's house, so thank you for letting us be here. And yes, just a completely different episode. So we have a monthly mastermind. We go around, meet up once a month, always go through what's been going on. We always talk about a range of subjects. I think it's mainly property, then we've got onto EU, we've got onto the B word that shall not be mentioned, that might have been and gone by the time you listen to this episode. And yeah, hopefully it's going to provide some content. But yeah, Mark, Alex, introduce yourselves to the podcast.
Yeah, well, thanks for bringing all your gear along, taking the time to set this all up. So my name's Mark, I live in Hull, not originally from, but I am very much rooted here now. And I invest in single lets in Hull, as you guys know, always looking for good stock to add to the portfolio. And so far, so good. Yeah, good place to invest.
Yeah, I'm Alex. Once again, thanks for the invite and thanks for the podcast. Also originally not from Hull, originally from South Africa, property investing in South Africa, mostly doing flips, now sourcing in Grimsby predominantly. Always looking for property deals as well.
Cool.
Perfect, and I will introduce myself just because...
Oh, you might as well anyway.
I'm the co-host of the Property Nomad, so...
But yeah, so anyone sharing any successes they've had in the last month since we met?
Yeah, I don't mind kicking off. So yeah, as you've already mentioned, this kind of monthly thing is a continuation of this would be the third or fourth.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I won't bother recapping as to where we were because that might be a bit boring. but what's happening right now, which is kind of sexy and stuff, is just the good old fashioned ex-council houses. To be fair, just had a really nice deal just across the road, actually, in HU6, and it's a three-bed end terrace. In fact, Rob, you came on the viewing with me.
Yeah, good property, actually. I think you've got that at a very good price.
Yeah, no, that's a cracker. So it's, typical situation. An elderly person has lived in the house and unfortunately has not been able to continue living there and has sadly passed away, and now the family are administering the estate. So they just wanted shop. It does need a fair amount of coin spending on it to get it to our standards, but for £66,000 is a really good deal. So in terms of numbers, if you're interested, £66,000 purchase price. As far as a refurb's concerned, it's going to be somewhere between £7,000 and £8,000. Doesn't need a rewire. Doesn't need a new central heating system. It's cosmetics. It's kitchen, bathrooms, a nice asbestos-filled garage in the garden, and that's essentially it. To get it to a standard where we can rent it and achieve £550, and from a refinanceable point of view, which most people are always looking at, what's it going to be worth and what's it going to value to, comfortably 90k. Possibly there's some that have gone down there for 100, so more of those, please. Quite frankly, so that's going through at the moment. Surveyor's been instructed, and I've just put another offer in on a property in HU9, and that's a corporate sale. You probably have come across it yourself, to be perfectly honest with you. Offer's gone in. I won't say too much just in case competitors are in the room. but we're amongst friends, so we'll see about that one. But other than that, that's kind of the couple in the pipeline, and there's a few other offers out, but the main one is to try and buy one a month at the moment, which is the goal for this year. So
can I just put in there as well that, just to let everybody know, there is no deals in Hull, so you don't need to come over this way.
Don't give me that.
Yeah, no, honestly, it's rubbish.
Terrible.
Yeah, don't invest up here. It's just terrible.
The yields are hateful.
Yeah, go to Doncaster or something like that.
Yeah.
Send them somewhere else.
Yeah, that's an interesting point, actually, just to touch on that. And I don't want to give it too much airtime, but it's funny that... I mean, there is enough stock for everyone, let's face it.
Yeah.
We're taking the mic, but there is enough deals for it. But sometimes there's a little voice in my head that says, don't say too much.
Don't give anything away.
Yeah. What about yourself, Alex?
Absolutely. So, myself operating more in the Grimsby Cleeth Hopes area, specifically talking about success, the biggest one last while has been finally securing a property to convert to a 6-bed all-in-suite HMO.
Nice.
In a specific sort of pocket of Grimsby. It has quite a big market for en-suite HMOs. They're not too many up for rent at the moment. Did one last year, and that was rented out in 3 weeks. It's taken about 3 or 4 months to secure the deal with the seller, but all worth it in the end. Finally, have a deal secured. It's not a mortgageable property. Looking at about, sort of, if we're talking figures, secured at about 60. Needs a full refurb. Obviously, all the fireboarding, all the electric sound insulation, interlink smoke alarms, the whole lot. So it's quite a sizable refurb, but quite a good ROI on that as well. So that would probably be the biggest success at the moment. Yeah, and amongst that, a couple of other clients have completed a few other deals, but I would say that's probably the biggest one at the moment. Yeah.
Brilliant.
Is that one for yourself, or is that sourcing?
So I'm sourcing through through a company that I've taken over through old connections, investingnorth.co.uk, and I'm sourcing this one to a client.
Nice.
It's you know, nothing complicated. Investing North, there we go. Basically sourcing it for other clients at the moment, just with the strategy and the timing of where I am myself. I would say that's probably the biggest one. And I had one of the deals that we secured last month, sort of sold that or completed that in a couple of weeks.
Nice.
Full flip, that's on the go, which is quite exciting. That's more Keith Thorpe's way. Quite a goodie there. That's pretty much it.
Just to expand on your database and how you've kind of gathered your database for sourcing, just for people who might find that interesting and, you know, some tips and tricks, what would you say is the best way to get, you know, more people on your database?
I think, to me, the database is probably more the personal touch. It's really networking and meeting people like this. So really, really something like this mastermind is key. It's building those relationships, because at the end of the day, whatever we do, it's, you know, property is the vehicle, but at the end of the day, people is what makes it all happen.
Yeah.
Thanks once again to the invite in the first place.
Yeah, no worries.
And the benefits of the mastermind, obviously we'll probably chat about it as we go along, are there to be seen. Share service providers as we have already. In the same way, to get back to your question, in the same way we build the database, just the face-to-face meets.
Yep, it's definitely got that more personable touch.
Absolutely.
You know, they can see you in person. See you as a personality type, and if you resonate with each other, and, you know, you've got that synergy, then
absolutely
works well.
It builds the trust, really.
Yeah,
that's right.
So I'll go for the next success.
I can do successes from the buying side rather.
No, that's fine. So successes, I'd probably say, is the flip. Our first flip for the TPN. So this one is, if you'd like to know the numbers, we just got it secured at 88,500. Looking at our DUV around 140.
Yeah, if it's a DUV of about 90, mate, that's not, we haven't done well done.
It's the same wrong mastermind.
Yeah. Get out. So yeah, DUV around 140. You're looking around 18,000 for the refurb. So there should be, you know, some nice margin in there for profit. We just got our keys beginning of this week, and we're looking to start works in around 2 weeks, 3 weeks. And then, look to flip that. And yeah, we've not put any of our own money in this one as well. So this one is all on behalf of Clark and Clark Properties.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll be carrying out all the project management, seeing it through to the end, and then splitting it 50-50.
Nice.
So I probably say that's the biggest success, is picking the keys up this week.
Mm-hmm. Fantastic. And if you don't mind me asking, what's the turnaround time on the refurb there? What are you looking at?
So we're looking around 2 weeks to get the builder in. And around 4 weeks, I'm right in saying.
I'd say 4 to 6 weeks, I'd say.
Yeah,
it's the
full.
There's quite a bit of extra to do. There's some old school, sort of what I call Tudor beams in the kitchen. Again, they need taken down. They're not particularly difficult, but it works a bit sad for the Labour.
Yeah. I mean, as it stands absolutely. At the moment, yeah. I mean, someone could quite happily move in there, yeah. as it is.
Yeah. I mean, and this is Hull as well.
Yeah, still, yeah, 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 yeah.
It would have been the most desirable house to rent, but, you know, at the end of the day, it's you could definitely move someone in as it is.
Cool.
Nice.
Cool. And how was that found and secured? And
through an agent.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was just a bit of a... Because I've got a good relationship with one of the local agents.
Yeah.
And they contacted me saying, look, we've got this property, it's been on the market for quite some time. Do you want to come and view it? Viewed it. Found out that the seller was actually going into a care home. Mm. So we thought, you know, looking to sell quickly. So we offered quite a low offer, obviously at $88,500. It was on for $100,000, and we got that accepted.
Nice.
So
yeah, there's good scope. There's good scope there to be
fair. And again, it comes down to building relationships as well. Because if it wasn't for me knowing the estate agency really well and building a good rapport with them, I wouldn't have been able to get a deal that good that quick as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And again, and that was actually a property we was going to source on as well. But then someone saw the deal and actually said to me, "Look, we'll invest the money. Mm. You know, we'll just do a 50-50 split." Should be good, looking forward to it.
Sounds like a good deal.
So moving on to myself. So what Aaron and I have done in the last, since recording this, so we completed on one on Valentine's Day, just a regular buy-to-let. That is in Rotherham. Big shout out to Tom actually for sourcing that, because that was a really good deal. And then yesterday we completed on one in North Branscombe, which was good, Pikestone. So that's all right. I probably shouldn't be giving all these streets and addresses away, actually, thinking about it. We should hopefully complete on one next Thursday as well.
Nice.
So it's been nice. These have been like simmering from probably say October, November time. Yeah. But you know,
is that Pikestone one the one where the lenders were knobbing around for
two and a half months to get the survey done?
Yeah, it was that one.
So that's really tenanted actually, which is useful. It's just bought say about 20% BNB, which is good.
Mm.
So you know, it's just a case of sinking the money there for a couple of years.
Nice.
Getting that redone. That's it. We're also in talks about negotiating an option on a portfolio of 7 as well. So assuming that all goes ahead, that's pretty much Aaron and I done for this year in terms of adding to the portfolio. And I'm sure it doesn't include all the TPN stuff, completely separate business.
Mm.
So yeah, it's been decent. But yeah, again, this is not just stuff that's just appeared overnight. As we all know, it's just taken time. And it gets in, it takes time to survey, then solicitors have got to look at their gear and then, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
But it just so happens that they're just falling around the space of a couple of weeks, which is nice.
Okay.
So, yeah, that's, and then the flip, as Matt said, TPN stuff. So, yeah, productive, decent, loads going on. So, single lets is where it's at, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think Hull's a very strong market for single lets.
I mean, most places are. I think that's the key,
if you know it,
yeah,
and you know, you've got that confidence and you've got that contact base and network, it can work. I wouldn't say it work anywhere. I know what you mean, but it's,
within reason.
It's probably not going to work as well in, you know, SW16, unless you've got, great stock down there, stay down there.
that's London for anyone that's listening and thinking, what on earth they're talking about, that's London.
Yeah.
So London area, isn't it?
Absolutely. Good. So what about, we sort of talked a bit about whether we talk about the successes and challenges, and I sat there cocky and was like, well, I've had no challenges, and then I've actually had two. So maybe we'll just sort of roll on to those if you want.
Let's not change the format.
Yeah, I mean, challenges-wise, it's not really that sinister. It's just the good old-fashioned, pain in the ass tenant, which you do get, right? I mean, they're not all that bad. They're not, but there's one, and that's been quite interesting. But we've been sympathetic, so it's been quite a good learning curve for us because, you know, I've got kids and I know how tricky it can be trying to spin all these plates and what next. And unfortunately, the tenants had some bad luck in that she got with a Wally, is all I can say. And he left her in the lurch, and he was the one that was the main breadwinner and was the one that was referenced and done on the affordability basis. So she's left high and dry, having to find rent for a three bed in a decent village near Hull, in Cottingham.
Wow.
So we've been really flexible and reasonable, and you know, trying to help her along, giving her the option to leave, you know, the contract early. But she's got a kid there settled in the local school, so trying to figure out, you know, if there's a way around it. The house we've actually just bought, funnily enough, that I mentioned in my successes, is potentially now earmarked for her, because that's more within her budget. So we'll just have to cross that bridge. So we're giving her a kind of a bit of an option there. So that's probably been, you know, it's not a major challenge. It's inconvenient. It's a bit of a challenge, and it's, you know, a bit of a knock to the cash flow. But it's not the end of the world. But I do genuinely want to try and sort of help her out with a bit of, you know, altruistic care for other people in a really cheesy way. It's tough, and she has got a genuine story. I think but there is a little skeptic in me that thinks, is it? But anyways, so we'll see how that pans out. I think the end of the month is when she's due to pay, so we'll just have to wait and see. So that's been tricky.
Tricky in terms of just, obviously there's a lot of communication involved. So have you found that you've just had to, I don't know, just be honest and just communicate effectively, as you always do, to be fair, but is it, well, challenging in terms of the rent's not coming in, it's just not going
to come? Yeah, it's a whole host of things, really. To be honest with you, this particular house, which was our very first buy-to-let property, and it's the typical, you know, that was our accidental landlord house. So we lived in it 11 years ago, and it's a lovely property, but it's been the biggest pain in the arse out of all the properties I've ever owned. And it's in an area that's aspirational, so typically tenants have only ever stayed for 12 months and they've gone on and bought a house. Tell a lie, we've had one there for 2 years, but they end up buying a house. So that's why where we currently invest is such a sweet spot, because it really helps that housing shortage and that need for rental accommodation. But actually the tenants that are in there are quite happy to be tenants, and that's cool. So it is a real win-win. But the biggest challenge, I think, is the fact that it's been a challenge always. You know, so the agents that manage the property have been great. So that's a local company that I've been working with, and they've now completely managed the whole of the portfolio. Brilliant. But it's when, you know, the tenants are saying one thing and you know something else. So I mentioned a bit of a kind of skeptic air about the situation. It turned out that she's got a dog and a cat in the house, but it was a mate's cat and dog that were visiting, right? And I'm like, then my agent sent me a picture of the garden, and it had like dog pee patches all over it. I was like, that hasn't happened over the last 2 days of a visit. That dog's a lodger.
A very unhealthy dog, if that's the...
So the idea with it anyways, to kind of get the tenant out of the property lawfully and legally, find her a solution, and then we're going to put the house on the market, sell the house, got a decent amount of coin tied up in that, sweat the equity into other assets, and hopefully move on, draw a line, and put it all down to experience.
So what's your biggest learning you've took from that then?
Don't buy houses that, well, from a yield perspective, it's crap. But again, it was our first house. Biggest learning from it is don't buy houses in areas that are going to be rented out to aspirational tenants. And when I say aspirational, that's people that have a desire and the affordability and the means to eventually end up owning their house. Because that is, you know, not really what I want, if I'm honest, because I want people to stay and to want to treat that house like their own and live in it forever, for as long as possible.
Why don't you just do rent to buy then?
Sorry?
Why don't you just do rent to buy then?
What, for her?
Yeah.
She can't afford it.
Oh, but I mean, for a prospective tenant?
If they could afford it, yeah, potentially. It's not something I've given an awful lot of brain space to be perfectly honest. But
it's just an idea, yeah.
It's but from affordability point of view, she can't afford to stay there, really. And I feel bad having to charge the rent that we're charging for it, because it's not cheap, even though the yield's crap. Its property value's a lot higher, so yeah.
Do you find that? That kind of tenant, I don't know if you've had a similar experience before, but for a tenant that you help out now, that probably stay with you as the landlord for quite a long time. Have you had that experience?
Question, actually. It's a very good question. You'd like to think yes, but I haven't got the experience of that to say yes at the moment. So no, right. No is the short answer. And in fact, in this particular house, I've helped someone before in the very, very early days of us renting it out. And they happened to be, well, the worst tenants you could possibly want, actually, which is a family friend. and it just was, it went sour. And yeah, we tried to help out and be reasonable, but that kind of backfired. And there were things that we didn't do so well. You know, we hadn't put the deposit in a proper TPS scheme, and we didn't know, like, at the time. One of those, I've got one property, I'm a professional property investor, I have, you know. really, I wasn't. So there was a lot of learning from that, but at the end of the day, I do believe that you get back what you give out normally, mostly. So yeah, generally people are pretty decent if you're decent to them. So that's all you can do.
All comes back to the law of reciprocity.
Indeed, indeed.
Easier for you to say than me.
And if not, it's Section 8 and you follow the process, right?
I mean, yeah, absolutely.
Or if they, you know, defaulted for that 2 month period.
Yeah, you do it 8 or 21, depending on the circumstances, and then.
Yeah.
As long as you've got your learnings from it, that's the most important thing.
Yeah.
At the end of the day. Alex, any sort of challenges over the last month?
Challenges, I would say, probably the lack of time to try and do everything. Doing my own sort of the property for personal and investment reasons. Doing a flip, a renovation, and at the same time running all the sourcing business. It is quite that's been quite a challenge, but it is what it is. It's just a strategy that we're following, and we wanted to buy earlier on in the beginning of this year. And that's really been the challenge. It's temporary. It is what it is. Mm-hmm. As the saying goes in England. I would say at the moment that has really been the best challenge. Touch wood, the rest has been alright for now.
What yourself, Rob? What would you say your biggest challenge has been?
I'd say time management. Yeah. My time management over the last month has been pathetic. It's been really, really bad. So, you know, for me, I think I'm going to have to go down and look at the diary again, look at, you know, think again. Because it's okay putting stuff in the diary, but then you get, you know, get the old excuses cropping. I was sidetracked by this, or this happened, or, you know, well, I checked my phone and then I saw this email, and then, or, you know, then you start reacting to stuff. So for me, I'd say, you know, yes, I need to look at the diary again, compartmentalise, like we do for the podcast recordings. Yeah. You know, admittedly, bar this one, it's a bit different, but, you know, we had to set time in the diary to do that, record the content, create the content. So yeah, for me, time management's been piss poor. So I know that I need to improve on that without a shadow of a doubt. Just have more discipline across the board.
What's been the knock-on effect to you not having great time management this month then?
Knock-on effect. So, for example, there's been a couple of times where...
Not turning up at the gym?
Yeah.
Let's call him out.
Yeah, call me out.
So, for everyone to hear.
No, there have been times, admittedly I have made up for it by doing it on Sundays and stuff like that instead. Less sleep as a result of late night checking emails and that sort of stuff. So that's a bit stupid. I actually still haven't got around to finishing my book off, but I know what I'm like. I'll do it the last 3 or 4 days before the deadline on the 13th of March to get it drafted.
Like most of us.
Yeah.
Last minute.com.
But yeah, poor sleep, which has had a knock-on effect with gym sessions in the morning. Bit of extra crankiness, if you believe that's possible, then a bit of extra crankiness as well. I'd say this poor decision-making all around. I get flustered quite easily. But then half that, in fact, no, 100% of the time, that's my own undoing. Because I know if I've taken a call or I've looked at something and then I get flustered, well, it's no one else's fault. It's not that person's fault if they rung me. It's my own fault for picking up the damn phone in the first place. So yeah, I'd say they've been the biggest effect. So I need to work on that and just, you know, have, you know, more discipline on that level.
Fair play.
And for people listening, how would you go about rectifying that issue if someone's in a similar position themselves?
It's like a Spanish Inquisition.
Yeah. Everybody turn their chairs to face one. Fold your arms.
Have you seen the Monty Python sketch on the Spanish? Oh no, is it Blackadder? It might be a Blackadder sketch actually on the Spanish Inquisition. Is it Monty Python? Whatever it is, YouTube it. Just right. Blackadder, Spanish Inquisition or Monty Python.
Does that sum up what's happening now then?
I haven't seen it.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't. It's just funny. It's just funny.
Okay, relevant. Fair enough.
And for all people listening, all eyes are bang on Rob.
What was the question?
I like that. You're like a bloody politician.
What's the question?
I could answer that one of three ways. I just won't answer it.
A good politician always answers a question with a question, not with a question.
So the question was, how would you go about rectifying the issue for listeners who may be going through a similar kind of issue? Or
yeah, just take more control of your time, have more mental discipline with it, and, you know, speak to people that you need to speak to. I know, for example, you know, half the stuff, you know, between ourselves, me and you, Matt, is we're so sort of scatterbrained.
Yep.
We need to work on, you know, certain those aspects as well. But yeah, I'd overcome a better discipline, better time management skills. Compartmentalising your day and then actually sticking to it. Pop your phone on airplane mode, for example. Pop it on Do Not Disturb. One thing I started doing is putting, if you've got iPhone, you've got I call it sleep mode. It's not called Do Not Disturb. There's another screen time. That's what it's called.
Yeah.
So you turn screen time off between whatever times you want, and you might only get message notifications on like a text message, or if someone needs to call you for anything, they'll be able to get through. So yeah, just utilising what we've got around us, I'd say, would be the best way to overcome. Yeah.
I think to add to that, probably one of my best approaches has been, say for example, you're juggling a lot of different things, which I am, because I'm doing the sourcing with all the other stuff as well, podcasting, is to be able to just like section up your day, and for one section just solely focus on one part of the business.
Yeah.
And then another section solely focus and don't deviate away from it. You know, unless you really have to. And from doing that, you'll get extreme focus on the one and you can chip away as you go. And that's what I'm finding is the best thing.
So why to, I hate questions. I love asking questions, but I don't like being asked questions. So going on to yourself then, challenge-wise, you went here at the January one, but what would you say have been the main challenge over the last, since the start of the year?
I'd probably say with the refurbishment project management side of it. So I'm doing a project management for HMO, it's a 5-bed, and liaising with the builders to make sure everything's on time. We was actually meant to be completed it 2 weeks ago, so obviously we're overdue at the moment, so obviously it's been a massive learning curve and a quite a big stress as well, trying to get everybody in at the same time, you know, syncing the diaries and everything. But because it's quite a high spec, you know, sometimes it does take a little bit longer to get it right. And our overseas investor that we're dealing with, he's happy to have, you know, a little bit longer to make sure it's going to be perfect spec. So I'd probably say the biggest challenge is probably similar to Rob's, actually, time management, but for project management. You know, making sure everyone's in on time and liaising with the relevant people. But again, it's been a massive learning curve for me moving forward that I'll be able to adapt and use on other projects. So it's kind of like a win-win. You know, it's been a challenge, but it's been a great learning curve at the same time.
Yeah. Best way to learn, isn't it? At the end of the day, everything that, like, certainly from what I'm hearing from you guys is that, well, number one, you're being honest about it, which is key, because you're sat there and you're not trying to make excuses for your excuses, and that's you know, that's all really you need, isn't it? It's like, we're all human at the end of the day, we're all going to cock up, but the beauty of it is that it's all a big learning curve. It really is, like all of the stuff you're doing with the refurbishment stuff, you know, that won't be as intense if you hit that same situation again, which you probably will, you know. And I think we can all, you know, kind of relate to issues of, I certainly can. Hopefully my builders aren't listening to this. Steve, I've got grey hair because of you. You know, it's been a challenge, and it is, but it's like that sign up there, it's a bit cheesy, but expect problems and eat them for breakfast. It's silly, yeah, but it's true. It's just, yeah, like
Kellogg's or Nestle.
I don't know. No brand. There are other brands available. But as
entrepreneurship in general, there's that analogy or whatever it is, where you've got a straight line, then you've got a squiggly line. It's never just a straight line, ever. You know, it's always that squiggly one. But what you can take from that squiggly one is a lot of learning, you know, a lot of experience that's going to help you move forward. You know, at the end of the day, as long as you've got the patience, you've got the persistence, you will get there eventually.
Absolutely, and if I can just chip in on that, obviously the willingness to learn.
Yeah,
That is crucial.
I think a lot of people will say, well, that was a problem and blame it on someone else, as Mark, you said, but quite frankly, if you're willing to learn, you know, next time you're going to have your refurb, and By the way, we've all had those with the refurb running late. So I'll put my hand up, absolutely. But you know, the next time you do another one, you'll sort of adjust your approach, or you'll have a better idea of doing things. So yeah, absolutely.
I think it's all about, as actually Rob taught me to do, is all your experiences, especially with the project management, because I'm very new to it. It's a case of just making sure you document absolutely everything. Do you know, whether it's on you know, a Word document or anything, because then you can go back to that, you can look over it, revise it, and learn moving forward.
Absolutely. Agreed.
Yeah, but it is a people business, isn't it, at the end of the day, in the same way that we've got the tenants to kind of understand and to work with. It's the same with the builders, right? And it's the same with the agents. And it's just, like, I've been in sales and marketing for a long time, like reasonably long time, and it just does come down to good old-fashioned relationships, you know, and that time it takes to build that. So, you know, all these little nuances that you'll start to see in just your communication with these people will change over time and will improve, or just you'll understand them, like, you know, you just get them a bit more. And I think that's quite an interesting thing, because there's all these, you know, little kind of pockets of people's emotions and mindsets and beliefs, and they're all different and they're all sort of swirling together. And you're, as the investor or the guy that's running the project, you're like, I'm on a mission, you know, you want this doing, you've got an investor that needs it now or then and this date, and stuff happens.
Absolutely.
It happens.
Absolutely. But and just to follow on with that, I obviously haven't lived in the UK my whole life, but as you say, having that network, having that connection, you know, it's all about the people business. Rob, you were actually one of the first people I met when I first moved to the UK, and although you understand property, you need to understand the local market and get to know the right players in the market. And obviously you already had quite a network going, and so thank you for that, for helping me along you know, back all that time. But absolutely, it is a people business, and you know, once you get to know everybody and you get to know who you're working with, that's when business really sort of takes on a different level.
On that, so I was going to make a facetious comment and said I must have sold Hull quite well because you've ended up in Grimsby. but in terms of, I don't know, I know a little bits and pieces about the owner. I think, you know, Grimsby come from what was it, some Viking dude called Grim, and you know, the BY is literally Viking or Danish for town, so it's Grimstown effectively. So it's a Viking, Viking place. But I mean, how does Grimsby, you live in Hull, but you operate mainly in Grimsby, so how does, geographically they're quite close, but in terms of what you've seen demographics wise, are they quite similar?
I would say yes and no. I'd say it's very, very area specific for various strategies. It really depends on sort of what one is looking for. It's good for buy-to-lets in certain areas for buy-to-let investments. It's good for HMOs in very certain pockets as well. Not a big fan of serviced accommodation there. Not something that I get involved in, although Cleethorpes is very popular as a holiday destination. It's got a strong rental culture. It's got the right kind of property price. The numbers work. As long as you're buying in the right kind of area, then I think you're fine. It's if you haven't done your research, if you don't know the local area, and you literally bought one or two streets up from the wrong street, you can end up with something that you can't really rent or sell on. And I do get those calls from time to time saying, are you interested in this? And obviously, you know, if it's in the wrong area, then the answer is no.
Yeah, knowing your area is crucial, right?
Yeah. Well, funnily enough, this house I've just bought or completed on, not completed on, just bought recently, that street it's on is a good street, but literally, and it's in the avenues, like a couple of avenues down, and we're talking, you know, maybe 100 metres, it's almost like Beirut. It's no offence to anybody from Beirut, but...
I think we're actually in Lebanon, actually. I've got a feeling, it is Lebanon, isn't it? Beirut's the capital of Lebanon, right?
Hang on a minute. No, hang on. Lebanon, that was where... What's his face was from? Who was the dictator?
Oh, there's many a dictator. We can...
when are you going there?
I'm not going to Lebanon.
I thought you said you
were... We've got listeners, I think.
No, oh, I think we've got listeners.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, I thought you said you were... Sure. Go...
We probably won't after listening to all of that. No,
they'll be going in for the TPN.
Yeah.
Is Lebanon the capital? So is Beirut the capital? I'm going to Google. I'm going to Google it and find
Trusted
out.
Trusted Google.
No, I'm sorry. Sorry, I didn't interrupt.
Yeah, I don't know. But no, you're absolutely right.
Being on the right street.
The right street. But had I not had the relationship with the agent, and of course, the key here is ask a shitload of questions, really deep dive into everything.
Well, you did, because I was on the viewing with you, and I was kind of taking a step back and obviously having a good look around the property myself. But yeah, listening to what you were asking. But it wasn't just property related questions. There was a lot of other topics that you covered, and you were really building that rapport with the agent, which I thought was fantastic.
Yeah, no, she was pleasant.
Well, it's emotional intelligence, isn't it? It's building rapport, you've got to do what you've got to do.
But you know, the funny thing there actually is both that agent and some of her colleagues in the office and other agents as well kind of confirmed. And I know, I don't know about you guys, but I do the usual, which is speak to multiple. I don't just go on one person's word, and because it could be, in fact, my old solicitor, and I say my old solicitor because I'm using Oliver now, Rob, and thanks for that. They're so far so good with those guys, so thanks for the recommendation. My old solicitor told me to absolutely avoid the avenues because his words were, it's like bloody Beirut. And it's like, okay, well, what's that based on? Like, why are you saying that? And had I listened to him, because I'm a young whippersnapper and he's an experienced, mature partner of a reasonably decent-sized law firm, had I listened to that, what would I have done? Maybe I wouldn't have done. But I just like going against grain. For actually, no, there must be something good about this area. I'm going to find out. So
I think that's where intuition comes in, gut feeling. You know, if you feel as though it's a good deal, then chances are 99% of the time it is going to be a good deal.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. So long as you've stacked up your criteria and your knowledge and walked the area, driven around the area.
Both during the day and night.
And you've come out of the other side of the area with your shoes still on your feet.
Well, that's a good starting point.
That's my litmus test, by the way. So if you see me down the road with no slippers on or shoes, I've been mugged.
Yeah, right. That's going to be a no-go area then.
I think, Rob, have you found out what...
Yeah, Beirut is the capital of Lebanon.
Okay, good.
But I think Lebanon's also got the only flag in the world that has foliage on it. It's got a cedar tree right in the middle.
Oh, right.
Its flag.
Foliage, right, okay. Pictorially foliage, not actual foliage.
Well, like, it's got foliage. Or is it fauna? Okay. What's fauna?
Fauna, isn't that like similar to foliage? I don't know, actually. That's a good question.
Cool. See, animals of a particular region, habitat, or geological period. Now, take back exactly what I said. I think it's the
I've heard of the word megafauna, and that's kind of like goes back to the creation of life and stuff, doesn't it? Megafauna? I don't know.
Sounds like some sort of dinosaur.
Yeah. I could have dreamt it, so don't quote me.
Well, whilst we're on the topic anyway, should we give this listener a shout out? Because how many have we got?
I think there's three or four. I'm pretty sure.
So shout out to
whoever's listening in Lebanon. Yeah, and I'm sorry if you decide to unsubscribe after you've just listened to us insult your country and capital city in your flag. But, in fact, I insulted the North and South in this country, didn't I? I think on one of the first episodes we've done. Because, you know, Mark, you're Southern as well. Anything north of the Watford Gap's north, fact.
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter whether you live in Birmingham or Norwich, it's north. Sorry.
Yeah. Well, even so, you seem to be doing pretty well. after insulting pretty much everybody, you've got about 400 subscribers.
That's an unwritten caveat to the mastermind, isn't it? Yeah. Get in and mug people off.
No. Pretty much done that. It's sort of them, it's sort of Man United fans. Pretty much. No whole bar mate of us. We're here to create enemies. I'm joking.
Also,
we're
not.
It's nice how this podcast has turned, isn't it? We've gone really, we're all sat up upright with you. Really nice P's and Q's. I've not sworn one. Actually, I have sworn one. It's all good.
We can bleep out.
Yeah.
Nah.
Keep it as natural.
Yep. Keep it as authentic as possible.
But in terms of, that's good. So pretty much success has gone through, challenges gone through. So I'll give you an update from the HLA stuff. So again, this is at the time of recording. So we went in court a couple of weeks ago and whatnot. Don't know the result of it. By the time it's published, there might have been that episode that, I promised. So we might know. But yeah, I think 50-50. Not sure on where that is at the moment. Article 4 is coming in August the 1st, I believe, 2019. So... That's all about the Holderness Road. pretty much covering HU3, HU5.
An extension to...
Yeah, pretty much quadrupling the size of it.
Oh, okay.
So that's going to be pretty big on the sort of like, you know, the conversion.
It's probably the right thing to do though, isn't it? In the council's defence, it's been so, like a lot of areas have been so well done.
Mm-hmm. I think it's the processes that they go through that I don't get, because, you know, for example, HLA is, I believe, the biggest stakeholder of property in the whole city council area, I think bigger than Hull City Council itself, who own a lot of, you know, stock. But normally you consult your stakeholders if you're thinking of making changes. Well, no stakeholders were spoken to. Mm. And there was a little, tiny little sort of advert in the paper. And, you know, that was deemed enough to whatever. Sure. But I think when you look at it, you know, in reality, yeah, is it the right thing to do? I'd probably say it is. You know, because if you were living on a street where you had like eight or nine HMOs, you'd get pissed off.
Yeah.
Wouldn't you?
You'd have all seen it when you've viewed places down, you know, in some of your areas off, like the boulevard and around the deer, all the rest of it. And you literally walk down and there's stickers, you know, big posters, you know, we don't want the HMO.
And I think it's usually, it comes down to the parking. You know, if there's a tight street where there's not so many parking spaces, if you've got HMO, 5, 6 bedrooms, and you've got 5, 6, even more cars in that household.
You know, I think cars, but also I think, and this is something I'm actually going to bring up, because it really pisses me off. Okay, now the gloves are off. So where I live right now isn't too far from Hull Uni. So naturally, there's a lot of student multi-lets around here. Across the way there, Raglan Street, you know, Sidmouth, Edgecombe, all those. If you walk around there, literally right now, the litter and the mess that's kicking about those streets. So my question, and even my wife's question, is because we walk it with the kids, take them around the shops and all the rest of it. So who's responsible for that? Now, I know that there'll be a bond paid by the tenants at the start of the tenancy, I guess, with a student let. I don't know, actually, but I guess there probably would be some bond.
I would have thought so. Yeah. At least a guarantor.
And then whoever the agents are that manages that, you know, they've got a responsibility. And that's what really annoys me about some of these multi-let setups. You walk down there, honestly, there's a lady who's actually a private resident around there. And sadly for her, she lives at the end of one of these streets and she's the end plot. And she's got a little brick wall, and people, I guess, students or whomever, have literally been dumping their rubbish in her garden, you know, not separating the mixed from recycling from general waste and all the rest of it. And she can't get rid of it because the council won't take the bins. So she's literally gone. Wow. She's having to personally take this away, and it's disgusting. So if anybody's listening to this and you own stock in HU5, and you don't look after those properly, or your agent looks after them, have a word and tell them to pull their finger out, because it's disgusting, absolutely disgusting.
Well, it comes down under the some of the HMO management regulations. It still comes down to the landlord, which I think categorically I don't agree with that at all.
It comes down to the landlord, even if it's being managed.
That is my understanding.
Yeah. Ultimate responsibility always falls to the landlord, right? But what my question is, that landlord needs to be managing their agent better, or giving them a kick up the arse, because they've clearly got complacent. Because it's, you know, it's been a while as well now. Like,
well, I don't think the recycling system necessarily. This is, I best not bang the tables. That's going to create shockwaves now. Recycling needs to be standardised up and down the country. Because I know from living when I was living in Reading. So when I was living with my mates in Reading, that came under Reading Borough Council. But the house I was living in before that, a family house, came under West Berkshire Council. But the recycling between those two was incredible. Mm. West Berkshire Council was brilliant because you had your big green bin for your grass or whatever. You had your little food bin, which was great. You had one for cardboard and plastic and one for glass. They, every 2 weeks, they came, took the whole lot away. Go to Reading Borough Council, you know, it might have changed now, but you had... glass, you've got to take care of yourself, they won't collect it. Cardboard, they'll deal with. Plastic bottles, they'll deal with, you know, all that sort of stuff. And come up the hole, they want left, right and centre. This has got to be separated from this, that's got to be separated from that. And then you try and go to the tip and ask them to close Wednesday and Thursday, you don't get shit done.
No,
I think
I have to push back a little bit on that, only because I agree with that standardisation and all the rest of it, but ultimately it's still the responsibility of a person to... either put that rubbish in that bin or not. And I think it's not rocket science. You've got a blue for your glass and your plastics. You've got brown for food waste and grass trimmings, and you've got your black for your general. The problem is that literally these students, and I say students, I'm being a bit like blanket statement, but generally it is, because the populace down there is heavily student based. They are literally just chucking rubbish. And we know as landlords ourselves, right, if we've got one of our properties, and I've had it recently where they've left like dog waste in the recycling bin. I mean, not just a little bit, I'm talking a lot. And other stuff, okay. Now, after following the right procedures, that got deducted from their bond, because that costs somebody, of course, time and money to go and rectify that. Mm-hmm. Go down there, when these students are leaving at the last term, whatever, well, it's the first semester, isn't it? They've just finished, but yeah. They should be, the agent should be checking them out, right? Like you would any, you know, taking the keys back, fine, let's have a quick walk around, like you do when you hire a van. You don't hire a van back with a load of dings and dents and hand the keys back and F off. It's like, no, there's a few dents there, mate, you owe some coin. And they should be saying to those students there and then that this isn't acceptable, this needs dealing with. And if it doesn't, and the student's like, well, I don't care, take out my bond. Fine, take out the bond, but actually do something about it.
That's what essentially we pay for management. Yeah. So that's what it
but
should
the problem
be
you've also got then, and I'm on my soapbox a little bit.
Not that I'll give it away.
is it's all well and good having one layer to that where somebody is enforcing that. So there could be a brilliant agency that is doing that,
yeah.
But then the neighbours a few doors down are then getting their bins and bags and chucking it back into that bin again, because it's such a widespread issue in that area of students. And it's just terrible. Even my 8-year-old son has offered to go around there and litter pick, you know, like, and I'm like, well, that's really cool, mate, but number one, we haven't got a litter picker, and I don't want you pick, I don't know where these bottles and what's in those bags, yeah. You know, but he's 8 and he's like, Dad, this is wrong, like, what the hell, why aren't the council doing something about it, why aren't people being arrested? Absolutely, son. Let's bring out a different law.
I think having better, as we were talking about, we touched upon the start, better communication, better systems, better management. So yeah, when I was going on about HMO, you know, management regs and whatnot, it's like, what I meant by that, to give it a bit of backstory, it's like if a gas safety certificate. Now, if you could be travelling 12 months a year and not give a hoot about what's going on, and if your lettings agent forgets to do a gas safety and then, God forbid, you have an explosion at your property, your ass is in court,
yeah.
Not the lettings agent. So, but yeah, that's from HMO management regs. Mm. It would be the same principle. But I do agree with you 100%. Mm. You work with your managing agent on that, communicate, because yeah, stuff that you walk up and down those streets, yeah, it doesn't look like crap.
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah, and it's, you know, it's your name against that at the end of the day, isn't it? You know, if that was one of my properties down there, I'd be disgusted at myself that I didn't sort it, and then I'd be kicking ass on the agents to say, "What the hell are you getting paid for? Like, what are you actually doing?" And if they can come up and say, well, actually, we're really trying to manage this and to, you know, to alleviate the issues for the actual residents that have lived down there, some of them for 30, 40 years, you know, it's tough. But no, interesting though, isn't it, that we're still ultimately responsible either way, whatever way you cut it, which is why, again, communication, the agents need to know that you're not just necessarily going to let them be totally left to their own devices. I think they do need a bit of light pressure every now and then.
Absolutely.
Because they're great. And I'm very lucky with our agents, but there's been a few tiny little things that, because I am a little bit of a, as Rob would say, a control freak, I'm on stuff and I know, and I can often be on the case and say, well, you know, and I don't spend a lot of time doing it, but I can, you know, see something or notice something that they might not have, because they're obviously looking after hundreds of properties. So, but if they want to be looking after my 100 when I get to that level,
that's the standard.
That's the standard, and I've told them that as well. Like, you're great, but when you grow, don't lose your boutique kind of focus and your ability to you know, to really work in a really good way that ensures that everybody's protected and everybody gets paid and everybody's happy. So
absolutely. Just to add to that, you're obviously local, so you do see your properties and, you know, what goes on in the area, and I presume that there are quite a few other investors who are from quite far away, and they're happy as long as someone else just manages it, whether they do it well or not. And obviously there's, as with anything, as with any profession, they're letting agents, and you know, you obviously have some good letting agents running your properties, and perhaps some of them on some other ones are not keeping tabs on their properties as they should.
Yeah. I think that's what it boils down to, and I do think as well that often comes with scale of a business. You know, you can grow too quickly, you can take on too much. I mean, we all do it now. You talk a bit earlier, Matt, about overwhelm. You know, even on a kind of micro level on your own personal situation, you can take on too much. These guys can, you know, go off because they've all got targets like we all have. I want to buy 10 properties this year. They might want to manage another 100 this year. You know, okay, great. Well, what does that mean? And from a starting point there, you've got your 100 now. What does that need to, what needs to happen prior to that in order for it to be successful and for it to work? And that's the worry, is that not everybody does that kind of reverse engineering of things to really understand what the map needs to be, or loosely speaking, what the roadmap needs to be in order for that process to work at one or 100 properties. You know, it needs to be so well systemized. And then it comes down to the people that are managing those systems, and then how. And I don't get it sometimes. I really don't, because I know that these guys, these agents, they're not earning huge sums of money. So when you've got somebody that is, you know, worth their weight in gold, well, if they, I'm sure that their own companies are incentivizing them in the right way. But I'm such a big believer in. I was going to say corporate bribery then, but that's the wrong word. But, you know, looking after good people, like, kind of, if someone's done something good, and I know you're the same, Rob, you won't think twice to thanking somebody with a gesture of, it doesn't have to be anything fancy or expensive, it could just be a half-decent bottle of Plonk, you know, just a small kind of token of gratitude and appreciation. Goes a long way, you know. That same person might then be more inclined to kind of think, well, you're a decent chap, and you've got good taste in wine. There's your win-win.
I think ultimately it's pretty much, it's a common theme what we spoke about pretty much all tonight, is communication. Everything comes down to communication and due diligence on the people that you want to work with and have in your team, and from then on it's going to be a lot easier moving forward for your business.
Indeed. And you've got to try, you've got to kiss a lot of frogs as well, because the agent I'm working with now weren't the first one, naturally, that you can imagine I was working with when I started out in this game. I'd say they're probably number four. And up to a point, I was managing my own portfolio for me to learn about how that process works and what's involved and what, you know, and there is, you know, a reasonable amount, but I wanted to know so that when I handed over the reins, I knew what balls absolutely couldn't be dropped. And our ethos has always been to create safe, affordable, comfortable homes that people are going to want to stay in and call their own long term. So in order to do that, you've got to have high standards, and having high standards is the only, well, I wouldn't compromise on that, quite frankly.
I think you've got to experience it for yourself, definitely, to be able to learn, to give back.
Yeah, Mark, but just going back to that communication, so what you're saying is then that communication then, or not just communication, but due diligence when you're buying property, you have to find sort of the right managing agent, and that basically takes time. So you're not necessarily going to hit the gold mine first time round.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's like most relationships. I mean, any relationship, typically, I'm going to be careful what I say here. Not that my wife will ever listen to this, but no. It's like anything. You just got to test. You've got to try. You've got to experience different situations together, and in property, of course, that could be bad tenants, that could be finding tenants. I mean, we've got one empty, we just finished a refurb, and it's been empty for a couple of weeks, and I'm not getting twitchy, because I know that Matt, my agent, he will do a grand job. I've got that trust in him, but that's based on, you know, probably 9 months of not handing him the full reins, but working with him on bits. And then going, right, okay, now's the time, this is what I want to do, and I've committed to, you know, to give him the whole portfolio. So we're at 11 at the moment, and we want to be at 100 in the next 7 years. So he sees it as a big cash cow for him, and he knows what our standards are. So all's good. But yeah, communication, he called me this morning with some good news that he'd inspected one of the properties that we've re-rented out following a change of tenancy, and golden nugget of tenants. It's somebody that's a joiner, so potentially could also use them in some of the refurbs, but I know the work's good because he's done loads of work to the house at, you know, his cost. I mean, I said, fine, you know, like, that's great, thanks very much. Lovely front. In fact, you came to view it with me before I bought it a couple of years ago.
What was that?
Dowood.
Yeah, good property, man. Yeah, good
he's put a there. Fence and a lovely gate at the front. He's put oak doors on the inside.
Every landlord's dream.
He's done the fence. He's done something at the back. He's doing the flooring, all sorts of stuff.
And he's probably there to stay.
He's there to stay. He's happy. All that work. And I'm thinking, brilliant, because I'm refinancing that one in a few months. But yeah, it's great. So Matt's great in that sense. So he then sent me the pictures on WhatsApp. And that's the other thing. He's available and I'm available. So if he needs me for anything, I'm there, you know.
Yeah, it's about working. It's about working and using. But I think, because you hear all these stories about, you know, again, you know, ultimately, and then it's going to fall on our responsibility to do X, Y, Z. But also, I don't know about you guys, but you hear all these stories from sourcing agents that are like, you know, ripping people off and doing this, doing that, and fine, whatever. Obviously, you know, none of us around the table do that. We're all, you know, responsible, ethical people. But when I hear those stories, what makes me laugh is that, yeah, okay, you know, 9 times out of 10, it's the person at the other end not doing their due diligence,
yeah,
which is scary. I find that very scary. So, you know, from a sourcing point of view, it's, you know, working with your clients to explain the area as best as possible. You know, and that's why when you're buying or when you're renting, you know, you've got your areas that are areas are fairly similar, but, you know, won't mention what they are. You know, Alex over in Grimsby, you know it like the back of your hand, and Clee Forbes as well. And doing your homework on an area is crucial, right?
Absolutely.
100%.
And you're going to cock up. Like, you're
going to make mistakes.
And that's a good thing as well. Like, it just is. Like, there's no other way to cut it. I think it's the best lesson in life is to cock up, isn't it? As they say. In fact, I draw sort of reference to my son again, that at the end of a week at school, sometimes, not every week, but I say to him, so what did you cock up on then today, son? And at first he was looking at me like, what? What did you screw up on? And now he sort of goes, actually, would you know what? I did this and it wasn't so good, but actually I did that and that's how I got around it. And that's it. It's just having that resilience and that resolve to find your way over, under, through, round, whatever it might be you're trying to figure out and deal with. But yeah, communicate.
Would we say, obviously might be people listening up, probably not in Lebanon anymore, if we've just completely insulted them twice.
Let's go to Iraq.
I think, yeah. If you listen to this in Baghdad, fair play to you as well.
Shout out to you in Baghdad.
With, what was the purpose in creating, just to go off on a tangent, the purpose of creating this mastermind? Because many people, when they're starting in property, they're like, you know, I'm going to do networking, business networking, property networking, and that's all great. And then you hear people talk about masterminds, and then some people don't do them. But some people do them. So what would you say the benefits of having what we're doing right now, which is getting together once a month, having a general chin wag, talking property, talking about the good things and not so good things?
Well, I think first of all, it's definitely the contact base. You know, if you're in this similar kind of area, then people can obviously share their contacts, whether it's builders, solicitors, accountants, which that's going to help your business massively. Also, you can learn from other people's experiences, as we've obviously learned to the, you know, a lot tonight, as we've talked through this mastermind. You hear people's struggles, but you hear how they've overcome that. So if you ever actually get to that point in your life, in your business, then you can actually have them tools in your arsenal to be able to combat them. So there's a lot of positives that come from a mastermind. And if you bring a different problem to the table and you don't know how to solve it, but someone else might have experienced what you've brought to the table, then you'll be able to resolve it within a matter of minutes, one conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. Learning vicariously through others, isn't it, at the end of the day?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And for me, selfishly, sorry to interrupt again, mine's a social life, guys. Like, I've got two kids. I'm like, guys, we can hold it at my house. Great idea. Yeah. Right, kids, bugger off. I'm getting my slimline tonic out. I enjoy it for that point of view, of course, and... you know, Rob, first guy out of this group that I met, reached out to you on Facebook, I think it was 2017.
Yeah.
You were wearing a Black Sabbath t-shirt, I'm sure it was, or something.
Might have been Kiss.
Or Kiss.
Yeah, I've still got that Kiss.
But he looks like a cool dude. I want to meet that guy. And you become a good friend. So it's like, you know, and we've hopefully helped each other and learned, you know, bits and bobs and shared experiences. So I think that as you said, Matt, is really key. But having a bit of fun, like it's just going up and, you know, shooting the breeze and playing some pool when we're not all doing our, you know, 100-day sabbatical from alcohol.
Not all.
Not all. Okay.
Yeah, awesome. You're a bit of an outcast on this group.
I am.
You know, it's just it's good social.
I think it's best of both worlds, as you just mentioned. It's, you know, that life balance of you can actually enjoy yourself with the lads or with the girls, whoever's round, and then at the other flip reverse of that, you're actually gaining some positive knowledge and experiences from it as well. So it's that kind of good balance.
Yes, building the relationships really. On all friends.
Yeah.
And the thing is as well, you never know who's going to do a business together, you know, who can help each other. So you can get a lot from it.
Absolutely. I find it's almost like having a board of advisors, you know, for lack of a better term, for doing, you know, what I'm doing. And I hope likewise, you know, we feed off each other with, you know, the challenges and successes and, you know, sort of the way forward.
Yeah. I think as the saying goes, you are the average of the five people that you surround most time with, essentially. So if you're hanging around with people who are more progressed further in their business than you have, then chances are you're going to want to follow suit and you're going to work harder to get there as well.
Yeah.
And using other people's experiences to get there.
Yeah, I'm sure that, you know, I'm sure the group will grow, you know, over time, but maybe only by like another couple of people. Because, you know, anything more than that, then it turns into...
Paid membership.
Ain't nothing wrong with that.
No, I agree. I think the other thing to consider with networking, I know we all do it. Like, yeah, okay, we're meeting up here physically in person and we are, you know, bouncing ideas off each other, learning off each other, etc. But I think it's a combination. So that kind of finished product or that kind of solution of, well, how do I best get knowledge and learning from people isn't always from this room, for example, because we're not always together. So I've always been quite, funnily enough, and this isn't to play on your property nomad name, but I've always classed myself as very nomadic. I have always been quite a sort of very driven individual person. I was quite happy with my own company and space, yet I don't want to be a complete loner that I don't learn anything. So my sort of learnings and mentorships come from listening to podcasts, reading books, listening to audio. And my mentors, although I don't pay them, are the likes of people that, you know, are either where I want to be or have been there and retired. So it could be, you know, taking some investment advice from Warren Buffett about what, you know, if you were to start again tomorrow, what would you do with your money? And it's like, well, I'd put 80% into stocks and, you know, 20% into bonds in some sort of index fund, possibly Vanguard, et cetera, you know. So I think having this, it's the tribal knowledge of the area that we're in and the pockets of property areas that we invest in. So having lots of different attachments to that personal strategy of how I develop and how I progress. Personally speaking, that's kind of how I operate. It's all comes together, melting pot.
I completely agree with that. So having a small, let's say there's four of us at the moment, you know, maybe there might be five or six in the future. So having a small group, you know, admittedly we haven't one of those, you know, I say technically JV, you know, between the different entities we've got around the table, there's no JVs that have been done, you know, yet. But again, it does allow for that scope for someone on the line, because we've all got completely different skills here. You know, so having that mastermind group, this mastermind group is going to be really useful for that. Because something might pop up, you know, Alex, you might pop up a great deal in Grimsby and you go, look, hey, put it on the WhatsApp group, get a WhatsApp group, by the way, if you sort it out. And you might, you know, might go, oh, do you know what, actually, I love that deal, great deal, boom, happy days. You get another buy-to-let property to your portfolio, you get a sourcing fee and it helps to build that rapport even further. So it's quite useful.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
completely.
Well, anyone, before we wrap up, a great documentary we're just going.
We're all itching.
What are we watching and why? Mark, you take the reins on why we're watching.
So sorry to kind of wrap this up, but we really want to go watch documentary because I've really sold it
really well.
It's a documentary about wine, funnily enough. That's how, before you went live, we were talking about nice wines and, you know, going through a few of my stocks over there.
He was teasing us pretty much.
I was teasing everyone. I was teasing myself, actually.
So just get clarify there. So
I'm on 100 days.
Mark's on 100 day challenge. Mark's on 100 day challenge for not drinking alcohol.
Yeah.
I'm not doing it for a year, so I'm back on in August. And Alex is just sat there looking at the wine, upset.
I'm from South Africa.
He's like, yeah, I'll have another tea. Thanks, Mark.
The brew will do for now.
Yeah, but it's a great, great documentary that I've seen. It's called Sour Grapes, and it's about this kid called Rudy. I think his name's Rudy, who's actually an expert. He's a sommelier, you know, somebody who's an expert in wine. So he is a genuine, he's legit. He's the real deal when it comes to being able to understand and tell you what this wine is and its tasting notes, etc. But what he does with that knowledge is a little bit dodgy in that he then starts to, first of all, infiltrate a network. Probably a mastermind started off like this around a table. and then started to, essentially fraudulently distribute and sell high-end wine that wasn't so high-end, basically. I won't give too much away, but it's a cracking documentary, and we're going to go and watch that once we retire from the podcast into the formal lounge.
And, cool. On that note, let's go and watch that, and hopefully there's been some great content that you've got from that as well. And again, you know,
something different. Something totally different, but...
And I apologise if you're listening from Lebanon.
You've heard this live and raw, so get out there, mastermind, meet new people, and just expand your knowledge and experiences.
Yeah, it's very easy to go and create a group. Say, we've done it from building that rapport over time, haven't we, by contacting each other, and the idea's just gone on from there. So, keep it between 4 and 6 people, make it regular, make it monthly. There could be some JVs to be done there. It's really sort of getting an inside scoop of what's going on, a bit of, sort of lads banner as well, or sorry, people banner as well. Have fun doing it, and happy masterminding.
And a bit of a extra added in there. Don't be the most experienced one in the room. That's always a good little tip there, because if you can learn from someone who is obviously more advanced than you, then happy days.
No, of course. No, but the only thing actually, before we quickly sample do that, Mark, Alex, if people want to get hold of you, how do people get hold of you?
Come and find me. If anybody wants to drop me a line, you can email me at info@kgproperties, that's Kilo Green Properties.co.uk. If you've got any questions or you fancy learning a bit more about Hull and the investment strategy that I employ.
Myself is quite similar. Drop me a line on Facebook, info@investingnorth.co.uk. Would be happy to chat about more Grimsby North East Link side. And just before we go, thanks for the opportunity, Matt and Rob. Love the podcast, and it's been an honour.
Happy Mastermind,
thank you guys. Yeah,
cheers.
Thank you very much.
All the best, everyone.
Take care. See you now.
Bye-bye.